Good health is a crown worn by the healthy that only the ill can see. Your health really is your wealth. Join us for the next hour as we explore disease and attaining and maintaining good health. This is Dis-Chem Medical Monday, brought to you by Dis-Chem. Better health starts here.
Good morning. It's just about to go. 9 minutes after 10, you are listening to 101.9 Chai FM. It's the Dis-Chem Medical Monday show. My name is Nicholas Ingle. I'm joined in studio by the phenomenal Craig Guthrie. As Benji says, pushing all the buttons. Our fantastic controller producer Sina Pabetsi putting more fantastic guests together for us. Today we're chatting with Kayla Erdang, a biokineticist, and what we're going to be covering firstly is what does a biokineticist do and what is their role. But we're going to be looking specifically at the role of a bio in terms of dealing with diabetes, hypertension, and arthritis. So, everything was fine until I went on air. Let us have your questions for Kayla on 061-895-1019, and we're chatting all things biokineticist work relating to diabetes, arthritis, and hypertension.
This is Medical Monday, brought to you with the compliments of Dis-Chem. Better health starts here.
Okay, I got my voice back for now. Sorry about that. You're listening to 101.9 Chai FM. It's the Dis-Chem Medical Monday show. I'm chatting with Kayla Erdang, biokineticist, and we're going to be chatting about the role of biokineticists in treating patients with diabetes, hypertension, and arthritis. Kayla, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
So just to start off quickly, what is the role of a biokineticist? I know most people refer to them affectionately as bios, and how does that role differ to a physiotherapist, a chiropractor, or a personal trainer?
So I'll just go into what biokinetics actually means. So bio is life and kinetics is movement. And so biokinetics literally means life through movement. And we use scientifically based physical activity to prevent diseases or facilitate in rehabilitation. So where we differ from a physio and a chiro is we do more of the exercise based and the final phase of rehab, where they do more the first phase of rehab. We, like, especially me, I work very well with physios and with chiros. There's a place for all of us.
And I was going to ask you, do you also have that steel rod of hell that chiropractors like to bring out to torture us? Fascia release.
No.
No. Okay, good. Okay, well, there's a plus. Thank you.
Personal trainers are great. They're good with if a person is healthy and doesn't have any underlying conditions or any injuries. That's where personal trainers fit into the... into the picture.
Just a question on that, I have a gym, I've been involved in coaching for many, many years, but something that happens quite often, and I think karate started with this many decades ago, where they would have something called a gashku, where all of the black belts would go back to the head of the system and they would spend a couple of days training together to re-refine their techniques. Is it a good idea for people to be going back to bios on a regular basis just to make sure that their movement patterns are correct, that everything's firing correctly, that there's correct range of motion and mobility in all the joints, something that perhaps the personal trainer, because of that long-term relationship, may be missing?
100%, especially in people that are competing, especially runners, cyclists, swimmers. Their training is often very repetitive, And if you don't have the right strength training to go with it and the right bit of prehab as well, that's when your overuse injuries can come into play. So definitely.
I think you hit the two main sports on the head there, where we're looking at running and cycling, and perhaps joined now by paddle as well because of the
movements. Sure.
How has paddle been for business? It was like CrossFit was 10 or 15 years ago.
Yeah, CrossFit and paddle are great for business.
Fantastic. So in reality, and you touched on such a good point, where there's biokineticists, there's physiotherapists, and there's chiropractors, where an athlete, even a weekend athlete, because if you start training and you develop a love and a passion for the sport, you want to be able to do it throughout your entire life. And I always mention him because, it's an amazing thing. We have a powerlifter, Dan Oppenheim, in South Africa. Dan is 80 years old and he's still competing, and he's been competing for 60 years. So it's vital to be working, even if you're a weekend athlete, with a bio, with a physio, and with a chiropractor, just to make sure that everything's working correctly. My question is, would the biokineticist be the starting point, or sort of where do you fit into in the treatment with regards to everyday life and sports?
In terms of people coming to me, word of mouth is such a powerful thing, and you're out with someone who's a patient and they say, oh, you got to try my bio, and they've never been to chiro, and I'll assess them and send them where they need to be, or vice versa, they'll land up at one of the others and then need to be at me. There's not really a specific starting point.
Okay.
It's kind of like a circle. I'm in a multidisciplinary practice, and I see someone and they go straight for chiro afterwards, or they've just come from the physio. So there's not really a starting point.
So go ahead.
Definitely, even your weekend athletes, definitely need the training. They need consistency, and they need to know what they're doing.
How,
you can't just jump right into right into anything, of course.
Absolutely. And how often should one be going to a chiro? Is it something that you go, right, I haven't trained for a while, I've been on the couch for a bit, I go to gym on my own, and I think I'm going to take up this paddle. Is going to, or another sport, not paddle in particular, is going to a biokineticist first for an assessment a good idea before starting?
I would like to think so, but most people don't think like that. Most people, come on, book the game, come play with me. Okay, cool. All you need is to put on your pair of tackies, you'll get a racket there, and let's go.
Yeah. And
most
then
people don't think, okay, they've been on the couch for the last 10, 15 years, haven't done anything, and their friend convinces them, and that is when injuries happen.
Yep, and unfortunately, as we get older, these injuries can be longer term and be really challenging. If you don't have the stability in your knees, you can be tearing a meniscus, you can be tearing tendons and ligaments, you can really be hurting yourself. And so from my side, I would say go and check with a good biokineticist first what you need to do. And it could be just a couple of weeks, right, before you can get on the court. It doesn't have to be a long-term thing. So if we're touching on the sort of three main disorders that we want to cover today, with regards to diabetes, let's look at that first. When working with patients, what role does exercise play in helping them manage their blood sugar levels?
So exercise will help stabilize the blood sugar levels. With my diabetic patients, I often ask them to check their sugar as well before we exercise. Don't want the sugar levels dropping during the exercises, so that's very important, but also to be under the guidance of a good doctor who can also facilitate and work with me.
Okay, so we're going to go to an ad break now. When we come back, I want to chat a little bit about hypoglycemia, exercise, what patients should really be looking out for, but what benefit can exercise bring to a diabetic's life. Dis-Chem Wellness Clinics for Adults offer convenient and professional care to help you manage health risks. Whether you're having your regular wellness checks, such as blood pressure or cholesterol, Dis-Chem Wellness Clinics offer you a broad range of health screening services, including female health screening with pap smears, family planning, and pregnancy screening. Fast, affordable, and with care. Find your nearest Dis-Chem Wellness Clinic inside Dis-Chem Pharmacies. Better health starts here.
This is Medical Monday, brought to you with the compliments of Dis-Chem. Better health starts here.
Thank you for joining us. You're listening to the Dis-Chem Medical Monday show here on 101.9 Chai FM. My name is Nicholas Engel, and I'm joined by Kayla Erdang, a biokineticist. We're chatting the role of biokineticists in treating patients with diseases or disorders such as diabetes, hypertension, or arthritis. Just before we went to the break, we were chatting about exercise and the value of exercise for diabetics. Kayla, before we carry on, we were just talking about hypoglycemia. You get your patients to check their blood sugar levels before they exercise. What are some of the warning signs that people should be looking out for that they might be hypoglycemic or have an issue with low blood sugar when they are training?
Often they'll feel very dizzy and I think very thirsty as well.
Okay. So dizziness, so
thirst. We have to stop exercise. We have to monitor their blood sugar. And sometimes we can't take that. If their blood sugar is a little bit low, we have to just take it down a notch or stop the session until they have taken.
They're feeling better. What would you advise for someone who's perhaps not with a bio to do in terms of that low blood sugar? Something to eat? Should they carry fruit juice with them? What do you advise your patients?
Yeah, I often advise them to bring something with, something that like a sweet or a juice or something that they can, that they've got with them, that if their blood sugar is low before exercise, we can they can take that and then we can monitor them throughout the session.
So how many slices of cheesecake are appropriate? So that's a personal question.
The whole cake.
Oh, fabulous. Okay, that's what I'm enjoying. So why should someone with diabetes, and again, this is going back to me with, you know, I think it was Professor Bloomberg who said this in one of our conversations last year. It's about patient responsibility. Patients need to take responsibility for their health. People need to take responsibility for their health. So if you are going to start sport, go and check with a biokineticist as well as your doctor that you're okay. If you're not 20 or 15 and you're in your 30s or 40s and you haven't trained for a while and you want to get back on the court, just be careful, because you can hurt yourself in a way that can potentially affect the rest of your quality of life. So going back to someone with diabetes and exercise, is it advisable really that someone with diabetes who wants to start to exercise again should start working with a biokineticist rather than going to gym on their own?
For sure. Also, remember, we are first aid trained. We've got the medical knowledge behind us to deal with these situations.
And so if there is a problem, God forbid, you know, within that golden hour, you know what to do, you know the call to make, and you know the information to give to emergency services.
Exactly. Okay. I have to say one good thing that has come out is with Discovery and their health assessments.
Yes.
We often do the Vitality Days, so people can check their fitness levels with us and their do the health assessments with a doctor or a nurse, and that's when they pose our checks. And often then we can already pick up if someone may be at risk, we can send them for further testing from there.
Okay, which is a great idea.
Yeah.
And a wonderful
responsibility. With hypertension, I know you want to speak about that as well. Also, patients have come to me the next year and said, because of your screening and because we couldn't get the heart rate down with the Discovery Vitality Assessment, I went to a cardiologist, I went for further testing. I'm now on blood pressure medication.
Sure.
Fantastic. So that has been great. Like, that's been a great tool in more of the preventative side.
Right.
And for early detection.
So with the training with regards to, and early detection really determines your quality of life after that event is detected rather than not detecting it. So the earlier, the better. It's a wonderful, wonderful concept of discoveries to get people to do these assessments and for work businesses to have wellness days where they let their staff access medical treatment and testing that they may not have been able to access without it. Just wanting to touch on exercise and diabetes. If we look at strength training versus cardio or a combination of both, what do you recommend for a diabetes patient? And what are the benefits around training, maybe boosting lean muscle mass? Can it affect insulin sensitivity? And does it support blood sugar control? That's sort of a lot of questions in one, sorry.
So usually with my diabetic patients, I incorporate cardio and especially exercises to get the heart rate up as well as the strength training. So I'll do something, maybe a walk on the treadmill to start, and then during the session we'll do some stepping just to keep that heart rate up a little bit, get the blood pumping throughout the body, and we'll do weights. We'll definitely do some weights as well for the strength training and keeping up the muscle mass. The exercise, it improves the blood sugar control, it boosts insulin sensitivity, and it can also reduce the risk of further complications with the diabetes.
Okay. You mentioned also getting clients to check their blood sugar before they come and train. In terms of building an exercise regime, something that's safe and sustainable for the client, how should they be looking at structuring and timing their meals and their medication around their exercise to effectively have a good positive effect on their blood sugar control?
So the medicine question is probably more for the doctors.
Right, 100%.
I don't deal so much with the actual medication, but it also depends of when the patient is available to come for a treatment. Some patients are only available in the morning, in which case they've just eaten breakfast. Some are only available before lunch or after lunch. So it's also on the patient to know how they're feeling and to work their meals around that.
Their training. Okay, 100%. So also, I mean, it is important to make sure that you've gotten in a little bit of food before you come and train, not so much that you may have cramps and so on, but you don't want to be arriving with an empty system.
Yeah, no, that's for sure.
Okay, excellent. Now, for individuals with hypertension, if we go and look at this, and I think I'm interested to know sort of what your experience has been doing the wellness days and working with companies, sort of the rate of hypertension out there that people are not aware of. Because I think that's really our big risk with heart attack, with stroke, you know, where you have hypertension, you may not even be aware of it, and your lifestyle is certainly not supporting the maintenance of that. So how does exercise and working with a biokineticist help effectively manage one's blood pressure?
So with blood pressure, you need to do a combination of exercise. You need to do the aerobic, the cardio side, as well as the strength training. You need to work that, to work your heart muscle. You need to get your heart rate up. But also remember, when you're exercising, your body releases happy hormones. So if you are stressed, if there are a lot going on in your life, exercise can help with that mentally, which will then in turn also help with the hypertension and stress levels.
I think the real value in exercise, I think we don't realize where there's a physical one, it's physiological, the changes in the body that take place, but emotionally and spiritually, it is so good for us because when we're exercising, even if we have to, it's still time for ourselves. Have you seen patients come to you maybe a little begrudgingly and then sort of develop a passion and fall in love with training and with exercise?
Oh, for sure. For sure. So many people come. No, my family members told me to come to bio. The doctor told me to come to bio. And a few years down the line, they're still my patients because they enjoy coming every week. They enjoy the training. It's their time to switch off and not think about it, but they know that they've been doing something to benefit their health.
And it, you've seen them sort of reach a point where they could carry on their own, but they value the interaction and the time and also being monitored and watched by a professional.
Yes, they need that. They've got underlying conditions, or they've had surgery, or something has gone on that they need that one-on-one session.
Okay. And I think it's much safer, because with a coach or with anyone watching an athlete, a number one job is observation. We've got to make sure that they are moving correctly and appropriately and not getting themselves into trouble. I'm sure you have a few patients that might get a bit out of hand if you weren't there to rein them in sometimes.
Yeah, definitely.
We're not going to mention
especially the athletes when they're not here.
Yes.
They're not in the training. And I see them the next week and I say, how was your week? Well, maybe I shouldn't have done this.
It's like, yeah, you know, fine, I rested, I took it easy. Well, why have you got no mobility from your mid-chest down?
I only did a 10K yesterday instead of a 15.
Yeah, that's exactly. I think that's such a good point, and I just want to go into that before we touch on some of the breathing stuff I want to ask you about with regards to hypertension. With athletes, I think the worst thing that a bio could do, or a physio, or a chiropractor, not the worst thing, but as an athlete, if you get told you cannot train, you have to stop, you have to take off 3 weeks. Sometimes we see people that will come to us and they'll say, you know, this person told me that I can't train for the next month. I think that's not really going to happen, knowing many, many athletes. And how important is it to work with a medical professional who has an understanding that you can't tell an athlete you've got to take time off for 2 weeks, for 3 weeks, or for a month, as an example?
So I'll speak from a bit of a personal experience. When I was in school, I had a knee injury, and I can't remember which medical professional it was at the time, told me to take, I think it was 2 months or 6 weeks off from training. And I did, and it was very frustrating, and I hated every minute of it. And the minute I went back, because I hadn't done the rehab and I hadn't actually done any exercise, the injury came right back.
Oh, wow.
Even if people can't do what they want to do, there's always something they can do. If runners can't run, there's swimming. You can do exercises in the pool are fantastic. I've always believed there's some alternative that you can do.
Yeah, I absolutely love that, and it's so true. If you can't do what you want to do, there is always something to do. There's a way to move. And, you know, go and hang out with the grands in the aqua aerobics class. You're going to make some great friends. People are going to offer to bring you meals. It's a wonderful place to be. There's always something that we can do. If we touch on that, in terms of an athlete...
I just want to add something in there. I also think someone asked me actually last week, they said, what is the best exercise that someone can do? Like for longevity, for health, what is the best exercise? And I said to them, whatever you enjoy. Yeah. I think that's also, people think that to be fit and to be healthy, they have to run, they have to do a 10K, they have to do whatever it is. But if someone doesn't enjoy that, it's no good to their health. You have to find something. There are so many forms of exercise. There are so many ways to move your body. And I think finding what you are passionate about and what you enjoy is also a huge part of it.
That probably is the biggest part of it, right? Because consistency is what's going to determine our quality of life in the long run and over our life. And if you can be consistent, then, you know, and if you're doing what you love, you know, you can tell someone deadlifts are the best or squats are the best or running's the best, but if you hate those exercises, you're not going to do them in the long term. So I absolutely love that advice. And that's, you just have to find a way to move. It's vital. Absolutely love it. Touching on some of the breathing techniques that are available for people with hypertension, what should people look at doing in terms of their breathing, breath control, to manage their blood pressure as much as possible in their exercises? So, you know, along the lines of exhaling during exertion, avoiding breath holds, all of these different types of breathing techniques. What do you do to work with clients with hypertension and their breathing?
So usually patients with hypertension and ones that suffer from any of the respiratory diseases, I'll generally spend in their first one or two sessions, and we'll go through different techniques. There's pursed lip breathing, which is inhaling through your nose and exhaling slowly through your lips. And then there's diaphragmatic breathing, which is belly breathing, which improves your lung function. During exercise, generally, the rule of thumb is you inhale on the easier part of the exercise and exhale on the load of the exercise.
Right.
And so my worst is when I tell someone, I can see you going blue. Remember to breathe.
2 minutes into the session, like, have you breathed yet? Yeah, absolutely. Hello.
Yeah. Can see their faces starting to go pale. I'm like, remember the
if you can't pass the talk test,
it's a big part of exercise for anything. For any part of any exercise you're doing, any condition, breathing through your exercise is so important.
And I think you can really control your state, your heart rate and stuff to a relative extent with the correct breathing and breathing control.
Yeah.
So On that point, and if you just check your notes, Craig's just sent you a note. What are the safe types of cardio? So I'm a power lifter. Cardio is a dirty word for me. You know, cardio for us is loading and offloading weight plates. We talk about running. I run a bath. That's just my personal thing. What are the safe cardio exercises for clients with hypertension, and also how should they monitor that they're keeping their blood pressure at a good level?
So with my patients with diabetes, with my patients with hypertension, we always check their blood pressure before exercise, because you don't want to start exercising someone and they pass out.
Yes, for sure.
So that's very important, especially also elderly. In my more elderly population, we often, if they come to me, they say, I'm not feeling 100% today, first thing I'll do is always check their blood pressure.
Okay.
And then cardio, also in terms of what they like, swimming's always a fantastic cardio, but not everyone's got access to a pool. It depends on their age, their lifestyle, if they can go for a walk around the block or they have a treadmill, just any exercise is getting your heart rate up, anything, any form of exercise is really great.
And I think that even that just getting up and walking, right?
Yes, just getting up, walk, take a 10-minute walk around the block 3 times a day.
So what are your thoughts on, and we'll discuss this after the ad break, I'd just like to get your thoughts on the different self-tests that people can do either for themselves or with a friend, or that you use, the talk test, you know, the RPE scale, rate of perceived exertion, and also heart rate monitors. Are they valuable for people with hypertension? We're going to get those answers from Kayla Erdang, biokineticist, straight after these ads.
This is Medical Monday, brought to you with the compliments of Dis-Chem. Better health starts here.
You've been listening to the Dis-Chem Medical Monday show here on 101.9 High FM. I'm chatting with Kayla Erdang, biokineticist. We've been touching on the biokineticist's role for diabetes patients, hypertension patients, and we're also going to touch on patients with arthritis. Let us have your questions on the studio WhatsApp number 061-895-1019, and we'll do our best to get Kayla to answer them. Before we went to the ad break, we just wanted to touch on the different sort of tests for patients with hypertension they can either use to monitor themselves if they're overexerting, or have someone monitor them, such as the talk test, the RPE scale, which is the rate of perceived exertion, and also heart rate monitors. So, Kayla, what are your thoughts on heart rate monitors as a way of getting people to check that they're not overexerting themselves?
Again, I think so now coming to discovery, this is where I don't necessarily agree with them all the time, because they reward you 300 points for keeping your heart rate over 80%, which in some cases isn't always healthy or isn't always best for the person. A lot in my practice, we use the RPE scale because I feel that's more of a reflection of how the person is feeling.
You can bring in your experience from the previous sessions with the patient.
Yes. And I can see that they can tell me they're walking on the treadmill and they're feeling a four or whatever. And you don't look quite look of today. Are you sure you're feeling okay? Maybe we should stop. Maybe we should check. And we can take it from there. Whereas the heart rate monitor doesn't always reflect how a person's feeling. I know even with me, I've looked at my watch sometimes. I'll be 170. Sure, I'm definitely not feeling like my heart rate's 170 or... wherever it's sitting, I thought I was pushing myself a bit harder than that.
Right.
So it's technology. There's always a bit of error.
On that point with regards to the rate of perceived exertion scale, when a patient walks in and you've built up a relationship with them and you know them, when they walk into your practice at the beginning of the session, do you already have a bit of an idea on how they're carrying themselves, how they're moving, the energy that they present as to how they're feeling?
I think when you start seeing patients week after week, as soon as they walk into my practice, they tell me how they're feeling.
Okay, fair enough. Absolutely.
They'll tell me, oh, I had a late night last night. I didn't sleep well last night. Whatever the case is. But they're very open and honest, and they tell me how they're feeling that day before we even start the exercise. So I know also with your autoimmune conditions, you can't push them. If they come in and they say they're sore and they're tired, you can't. If I had an amazing session planned, sometimes you just got to go back to the drawing board and change up the session a little bit and do what's right for them and their body in that hour that you see them.
I think that's such an important point and such a valuable point that you make. It's not about walking in and doing the training session, the workout that's written on the board, because that's what was sort of in the mind at the time. It's about how the patient is feeling, and you carry that the awesome session over to the next session when they're feeling a bit stronger, because it's about, at the end of the day, benefiting the patient, not showing sort of, you know, what you can do. Absolutely. So
you don't want them to exercise for the half an hour, the 45 minutes that they're here, and the next thing they're in a flare-up and can't get out of bed for 3 days. Then there was no point of doing the exercise.
That's it. And it actually ends up hurting them.
Yeah.
So if you look at strength training from the perspective of a patient with hypertension, how valuable is it? What are some of the things that they need to be doing to be safe with strength training?
So with strength training, there's always the element of injury. So they need to make sure that they're feeling okay on the day. They need to, that a lot of it is body awareness. And most people with hypertension, they take their medication and thank God are on their way. And as long as it's monitored, can pretty much do what anyone else can.
Right. 100%. And it's just monitored, I think, is the key word here. If we move on to arthritis, and patients with arthritis, I suspect, often struggle with joint pain and stiffness, and that can inhibit their desire to move or to exercise. And perhaps there's also a bit of perception around, if I train, it's going to trigger a flare-up and I'm going to be in a worse position. How does the role of a biokineticist support individuals with arthritis in helping them reduce pain and, as importantly, improve mobility?
So I really feel sorry for my arthritis patients. It's really not a fun thing to have. And with that comes a lot of decreased range of motion in their joints, a lot of pain. We've got to take it day by day, see how they're feeling. We work on a lot of mobility, flexibility, just getting the body moving in small motions.
Right.
Just to help them feel feel like they can move and that they can carry on with their activities of daily living without letting the arthritis get in their way.
How have you seen some of your patients, and I don't want you to share personal stories or naming people, but how have you seen the work that your patients with arthritis doing with you enhancing their quality of life over time?
It depends on where the arthritis is. Some people get in their feet, in their hips, their hands. Unfortunately, their hands is not a hell of a lot we can do, but if it's in their hips or backs or whatever, we really can. And the greatest feeling is when I see them week, and the next week they'll come to me like, you know what, I did this week, and last week I struggled with it.
Oh.
Or there's a movement we've been working on specifically, and they say, this week I managed to do it. I managed to walk up the stairs and be okay. I managed to pick my grandchild up without being sore afterwards. Whatever it is, those small accomplishments for me make my job so worthwhile.
Sure, that's absolutely phenomenal. I think it's when you can see the value that you're adding to people's lives, I don't think there's a greater reward for any form of work. With regards to the arthritis patients, and particularly those with maybe severe joint pain, in working with you, are you able to get them to a point where you can encourage them or start to encourage them to look at adding extra activities to their lifestyle, maybe low impact stuff like water aerobics, maybe yoga, Tai Chi, resistance band work? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
For sure. So when I did my internship, I did it in hydrotherapy, and for me, there's no benefits like being in the water, especially for something like arthritis. Whether you're swimming, whether you're just walking up and down the lanes in the pool, any of that, where they're just taking that pressure off your joints, and the warm water is really, really so beneficial. My patients also get a home program from me.
Okay,
that fine. they can do at home.
So I actually want to touch on that.
I encourage them to do that.
I want to chat a little bit about that as soon as we're back from these ad breaks. You're listening to 101.9 High FM. It is the Disco Medical Monday Show.
This is Medical Monday, brought to you with the compliments of Dischem. Better health starts here.
We've been chatting with Kayla Erdang, biokineticist, here on the Dischem Medical Monday Show on 101.9 High FM. We were chatting about the home programs that Kayla gives to some of her patients before we went to ad break. And I just wanted to touch on that. If it's possible, what advice would you give to people in terms of what stretches to do? Where should they be stretching? Should they be looking at maybe stretching in a hot bath or a warm bath if they don't have access to a swimming pool? What are some of the mobility work that people can do on their own?
My favorite mobility that I give probably to 99% of my patients is, I say, when you're lying in bed at the end of the day, go onto your side, you bend your knees, and your arms are stretched in front of you, and you open up your top arm. And that's a thoracic spine mobility and a pec stretch in one. And from today's life, from sitting in the car, from sitting at computers, to watching TV, everyone's posture, from being on phones, everyone's posture just needs that. And for me, that's my number one mobility go-to, whether you're injured, whether you're exercising. But I feel like in today's day and age, everyone needs that. And then the other one would be hip flexor stretch and hamstring stretch from sitting the whole day. Unfortunately, we have these lives where most people are chair-bound.
Yep, and properly chair-bound, absolutely. What and I love that stretch. That's pretty much how I wake up in the morning, because it's just a nice way to get everything moving and popping. And I think we really, in terms of the modern lifestyle, neglect our posterior chain. We sit sort of almost in a C shape and let everything get tightened up, which ends up stooping us over. It's not a good quality way to live. We're not going to be getting in enough oxygen. We're not going to be upright as we should be. As we wrap up the show, Keller, what three tips, what three pieces of advice, and sorry to drop this on you now, would you have for our listeners that they can use to improve their quality of life?
Definitely just try and move your body 30 minutes. I tell my patients, even if it's four times a week, just to move, to walk outside, to stretch, just to do something with your body so that you are not in the same position the whole day. Eating a balanced diet goes without saying for me.
Yeah.
What you put in your body is also so important, and sleep. Getting enough sleep. You can't exercise if you haven't had enough sleep. That's also when you at a bigger risk of injury.
So if you're not giving your body the chance to rebuild that tissue, and you're not giving yourself the chance to rest, right? Sleep is my favorite thing in the entire world. So from your side, as we wrap up, is there any sort of last message? We've touched on moving, making sure we're eating correctly, and sleep. Anything that you would like to say just to wrap up?
I think if anyone feels any niggle in their body or anything that just doesn't feel right, always go get it checked on. Don't leave things until it becomes worse. Go to your physio, go to your chiro, go to your bio. But if there's something, just rather get it seen to early.
Yep. And if you're a single guy without a wife to check on you, just go and get it done, because you're going to leave it forever and just learn to live with it. So great advice. Kayla Erdang, thank you so much. It's been absolutely fantastic chatting to you. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. That was Kayla Erdang, biokineticist. We were chatting about a bio's role looking at diabetes, arthritis, and hypertension, but also in general, and some great advice just to wrap up the show there from Kayla in terms of move your body, watch what you eat, avoid those inflammatory foods, I would say as well, and get your sleep. Thank you for joining us. You've been listening to 101.9 Chai FM. It's been the Dis-Chem Medical Monday show. I don't know why I always get sad at this part of the show, because I've got to say goodbye to you guys. But then at least I know I get to chat to you next week. Thank you for joining us. I'll see you next week.